Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comic Extension. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Hello. Cole Hornaday.
Hey, Ben. What's going on?
Hey, I'm good. Doing a podcast.
You're
and Chris
right?
Casso.
Hello.
How is everybody this evening?
It occurred to me last week that, you know, we never refer to Chris as... You know, we never play off his last name, because every time I see his name pop up in print, I see chaos. I don't see Chris Casso. Okay. I see Chris Chaos. And you know, we've never called you Captain Chaos or the Chaos King. Or...
Thanks for not making that quesos and making me a cheese.
Oh, no.
Well, yeah. I wouldn't do
you're
that.
You're not cheesy. But there is something spicy about it.
Every time.
Caliente.
Every time I do the intro, I have to prevent myself from saying Chris Casso MG.
Oh,
so MG.
But so we had there's, you know, there's got to be some fun chaos non cheese related.
You know, I almost
for which we can dub you.
I almost never misspell my last name. I always misspell my first name, and it's like Krios Casso.
Or you become Christ. You add a T on the end.
Yeah, I tend to be Christ a lot. So.
I also think we need to acknowledge the Emerald Queen among us.
We do have an Emerald Queen among us, don't we?
Amazing job with her hair. It is like. You know, this is not Manic Panic Green. This is like...
This is Arctic Fox.
This is like some amazing... is it turquoisey?
I don't know.
It's green.
It's green.
It's emeraldy
yeah,
green.
Yeah, I used aquamarine and phantom green, whatever that means. And it came out green.
Green.
Yes.
Green.
And of course, someone
epically
at this table...
Green.
No, someone at this table is going to ask you, Nicole, is it easy being green?
It is. It's totally easy.
Dude, guys, she even did her eyebrows. It is amazing.
That's makeup, though.
Oh,
my little
no,
blondies are under there.
This. I wanted
the illusion.
I wanted the image in my head to remain of you painstakingly combing the dye
well,
into your into
put
your
it in
eyebrows.
Doing eyebrows every day is a little painstaking.
Okay. Now, your hair was like lavender quite recently as well, wasn't it?
Dilly dilly.
Dilly dilly,
lavender.
Dilly,
wasn't
lavender. No.
Blue,
dilly, maybe I need to calibrate my monitor
green.
A little bit.
I will be king, maybe. Dilly dilly. You will be queen, Gilly. I am just too old.
Just making some background sounds.
Yeah, but it's a real song. Though.
There you go.
Should we get back on?
Now,
topic?
Would you say it's more? Would you share?
Yes,
would you
talk about me again? Yes.
Would you say? Would you say she is rocking more of a Polaris or a Madame Hydra or a She-Hulk?
Not She-Hulk. Polaris.
Oh. Yeah,
sure.
That's been I think the majority Polaris.
Majority she's not
Polaris.
She doesn't have the Madame Hydra vibe, but Polaris definitely.
No.
you know, late 90s Polaris, more liberated, more like, you know, Jamie, who's that? Havoc.
Oh, Alex.
Alex.
Yeah. I guess I could even put Gamora on the table, but I think hers is a little darker.
When,
she's green
when
everywhere.
When they believed she was Magneto's daughter, you know, before that all got
meh.
Anyway, Nicole looks outstandingly lovely, and you guys got to check her out.
Speaking of fun, playful characters, Funko Pop just opened up in Everett.
Well, they've been in Bothell. Now is this?
Well, they opened up like a Play Wonderland up there.
Yes, it's a retail extravaganza.
Oh, yeah,
so you can go and play and be inspired to buy as more toys than you can carry home.
Yeah, there's like a Batmobile you can stand in if you want.
You can
to.
Even make your own Funkos. They have Funko pieces,
right?
You can Frankenstein a thing together.
Wow, because Disney did that with like the droids, the Hasbro droid figures. So you can go in and they have like these boxes where you can have droid facts. Maybe like Build-A-Bears, they have Build-A-Droids. At,
now you have Build-A-Pop.
Build-A-Pop.
Yes.
Pop-A-Pop.
All right, so if you're anywhere near Everett, go check them out. I try not to go up to Everett all too often.
Well, I think we need to make a road trip.
Road trip.
You know, it might inspire you if you do Google Funko. They have a lot of people who have taken pictures, and it looks really cool.
Yeah, there's a big Godzilla holding a train that he's ripping apart, and there's little Funkos inside the train.
Oh,
pretty cool.
Gonna have to go look at this. Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did anybody see the trailer for Netflix's Marvel's The Punisher?
I did.
That they're coming out.
No, I have not
now,
seen it.
What I found surprising is that he actually has the T-shirt. He's got the Punisher T-shirt in the show, which he did not wear
in the Daredevil
Daredevil.
They're
TV
really
show.
Slow to put anybody in a costume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like really
I just finished
slow.
Watching Defenders, and I'm like, you know, what are we going to do? How's this going to settle out? Because we have we have Daredevil in his costume, awkward though I think it kind of looks design-wise, but we still get everybody else in their street clothes, and I'm like, is this the way it's going to be? Now, Jessica Jones never really had a costume except when she was Jewel back in the day, which was retconned, and that's kind of just silly anyway.
And Luke wears yellow, like either does. In his hoodie or in a t-shirt.
Sure.
So, and that's pretty much
I guess
it.
The only
we're not gonna get like tiara.
Question is Danny Rand gonna be in the ballet shoes?
Yeah, just put it in.
In the,
yeah,
the hood on his face.
That, just get it on. Get it on your body. You little
in the tights,
fussy boy.
Little knee tights. Because you know, he's darn cute in that costume.
Yeah, he looked good. You could still show off his chest, you know? Yeah. And they already showed the monks with the colors, with the olive and the yellow. So it's like
this is true.
You just
get in there.
Just do it. Yeah.
The Punisher thing though, every time I see an actor wear a Punisher thing in the movie, it just looks like a dork with a shirt.
Yeah,
right.
It looks like here's a TM version of the design, and right. I just wore it, and it's just like, I don't know. I either want something that looks more put on at the last second because it's not something Punisher would take the time to design.
Right.
In my mind, he'd be more trying to make sure he has the right amount of bullets to kill somebody.
Mm-hmm. It's not actually a skull stencil. It's sweat stains just happen to, you know, drip.
Angry sweats. Yeah.
They have
vengeful
played
sweat.
with the symbol, with the Punisher symbol in either the marketing or trailers and things like that. So some sort of stain that happens to look like a skull. I don't know. Clouds look like things,
because
right? There's been worse things.
Well, I've seen clouds from both sides now.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to just keep doing the song references, kids. But wasn't the original Punisher design, he had his...
The like, bullets were the teeth.
Or were the bullets or billy clubs?
Or the... Not clubs. I thought they were ammo pouches.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know.
Either way, it's like he really couldn't get a full inhalation of breath because he's got this basically bullet corset over his abdomen.
Mm-hmm. So. Ain't got no time to breathe.
Yeah, no, just to kill.
Bullet corset would be a great band name.
Let's write that down.
Yeah,
let's bullet write corset. That down. Bullet
Although I did corset. Find it interesting. I mean, I knew that the Punisher was going to kill people, but you don't see superheroes on Netflix killing people a lot.
Nope.
Everybody's like, don't kill them.
Right. It's gonna be a new phase.
Yeah. Matt Murdock is always trying to be is he Catholic or Christian?
Catholic.
He's Catholic.
Yeah,
so he's always Irish feeling guilty.
Catholic.
Yeah,
the
Irish Catholic.
Remember you see him in the confessional all the time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Punisher. I'm looking forward to it. I liked that. That was one of the better parts of season two of Daredevil.
Yeah, he's great casting.
Yeah. A couple of sad pieces of news this week. Len Wein passed away, co-creator of Swamp Thing.
And Wolverine.
Yeah, they stayed together.
Someone had done this great Wolverine Swamp Thing illustration mashup, and I wish
Wolverthing.
And it was actually quite, it was well done. And maybe our buddy John, the Swamp Thing collector, can forward it to us if he's still listening to the show. But John Boylan, if you got a copy of that picture, can you send it to us? Because now I want to make sure I didn't dream it. But yeah, I actually had Mr. Wein sign some of my old Swamp Things at Emerald City Comic Con a couple of years ago.
Really?
And I did not have the wherewithal to I got some fair copies of the original Bernie and Len Wein stories, and that was pretty cool, and I'm really happy I have those. I regret not getting him to sign my Hulk 181, but you know, there's only so much you can do in one lifetime.
Yes.
And also Harry Dean Stanton, a favorite actor of mine, passed away. He was 91 though.
Yeah
And
he lived a full life.
It's funny, before I watched Twin Peaks The Return, we were all questioning whether or not he was still alive, and then of course 8 months later it's just like, okay.
That happened with me and a friend of mine. We were wondering if Jerry Lewis was still alive, and months later he passed away.
Yeah, I was just doing that too.
You know, when I saw the notice that he died, it occurred to me that he's in some of my favorite movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Repo Man. He has some of the best lines in the world in Repo Man.
Alien.
Paris, Texas.
Yeah, which I've never seen.
Yeah, is that Wim Wenders or?
Couldn't tell you.
Yeah, I think it's one of the German directors. It. Anyway, yeah, his body of work is really impressive.
Yeah, he's one of those great crusty old character actors, which, you know, will elevate any bad movie
exactly.
he's in.
Mm-hmm.
So, he's a really interesting person too. I've seen some interviews and his own like belief on life, that like life is just a game, and like people try to pin him on certain things, and he's like, who cares? It's just a game, whatever. And then he's like chain smoking, and he's just like, what? It's just really enjoyable to watch him in an interview. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So, rest in peace, Len Wein and Harry Dean Stanton. Mm-hmm. Also in the news, Batman, the animated series, turns 25.
Oh, man. That was
Can you believe
get,
it?
That was hard to get my head around.
Yeah. Groundbreaking animated series, Batman, the animated series.
I remember when they announced it, when the Burton film, I think it was after the second Burton film, and my roommate at the time and I were just ecstatic because we fancied ourselves pretty hardcore Bat fans, and that, you know, there are just certain, there's a code, there's a structure to how you tell Batman stories, and Mr. Burton kind of played fast and loose with some stuff, but we were really, really optimistic about what this animated series was going to be like. And I remember we got a video clip that someone picked up at a convention or something on VHS, and it just had the introduction sequence to it, and we just played that over and over. And I don't even know if it had the Danny Elfman soundtrack on it yet, but you know, the lights of the Zeppelin light up, and the bad guy running across, and we were like, this. And we immediately looked at each other like, this looks like the old Max Fleischer Supermans, and this is beautiful.
The nice thing is, because it's the anniversary, people have been getting a lot of stuff online lately, including the original promo version of that that they used to sell the series.
Yes.
So there's a slightly different version.
Right.
And then all of the original character design work has been popping up online.
I saw that.
It's really nice.
And there were tons of known comic book illustrators of Mike Mignola and Kevin Nolan contributed to that whole design aesthetic. Mm-hmm. What were you going to say?
Do you think they'll re-release the DVDs? Because they're not really readily in circulation right now. They're not too hard to obtain, but you have to do it through secondary parties.
I would think so.
Because I'd love to own that at some point, but I'd like it not
I bought them all back in the day. Oh, there
as
was
much
a,
as they are.
Yeah. They did, but they also did one that's on YouTube. They did a standalone, or Bruce Timm did, of Batman and the Monsters, of the Dr. Hugo Strange
the
Monsters.
The Monster Men.
The Monster Man, thank you. And it's just like a 6-minute short done in a, but it's all very 40s looking. It's got the 40s.
Mm, nice.
Have you ever seen it?
Mm-mm,
oh, it's
no,
lovely.
I haven't.
Okay, let's put it on our show notes.
So, okay, remind me of that because I wasn't paying attention to what you were saying.
Right.
I was thinking about my next question, which was, can you stream the animated series anywhere these days, or do you have to watch it on DVD?
I know on Netflix you could stream a lot of Justice League.
Yeah,
but
I don't think they have animated on Netflix unless they've recently added it. Because I've been looking, and I think right now the only way, unless there's some other, you know, there's so many streaming services and so many up and comings that maybe some.
Eventually there will be just a Batman streaming service.
Yes, you know? Exactly.
We say that about Star Trek.
Exactly.
You know, eventually there's just going to be one Star Trek channel.
Yeah.
Still haven't done that for us.
I'd subscribe.
But this would mean somebody could say you can come to the same Bat channel at the same Bat time.
Yeah. Well, I have all the Batman the Animated Series DVDs if you want to borrow them.
Ooh.
I have all the seasons.
Maybe one day when I have time.
And I have all the Supermans.
It's a dream.
That's and you have why
all
I just own
I have all the Supermans and the
Justice League.
So you can do a straight, 10-year run of this one universe because they all match up perfectly.
Yep. And they all have that same look to them and the same tone.
Same voice actors.
That's
a lot of Kevin Conroy.
Yep.
All right, cool. And when Heath Ledger was first announced as the Joker for Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight, I was really, really skeptical. I'm like, come on, man. Heath Ledger's the Joker? No way. And then that first promo picture came out, and I'm like, oh. Same thing happened with David Harbour and Hellboy. When I first heard David Harbour as Hellboy, I'm like, I don't know. And then his first promo picture came out with him in the Hellboy getup, and it looks pretty good.
He looks really great.
He looks very swole.
Yeah.
He's much buffer.
You want Hellboy to be swole.
I don't, you know what? Actually, I want him to be a thick slab of meat.
Yeah.
Because swole, Mike Mignola never gives you an idea that anybody looks like sexy manly.
No.
They just look like.
He's like a bag filled with
rocks.
Rocks,
and stuff.
He's
cigarettes.
A drumstick.
And
he looks like a turkey drumstick because he's got the big, broad, huge barrel chest and the little hoofy, and the little spindly feet. Hoops and stuff.
So Ron Perlman to me is like still the best best body.
He's a bag of rocks.
But, he's a bag of rocks.
But this guy actually the makeup design they did for him
looks
like the Ron Perlman makeup and they made him look like Ron Perlman as far as Ben and I were concerned.
And the hand looks more like the comic a bit. It's less stylized, which is kind of 50-50 for me because I own a right hand of Doom that's based on the Guillermo del Toro's and now I don't want to have to look at another hand of Doom.
No.
But you know.
No. It all kind of, you know, it all goes together, you know. Yeah.
So I'm excited. I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do with all that.
You know what's kind of been forgotten are the animated movies, the Hellboy animated movies.
They were fun.
They were, they actually were they attempted to draw more closely from the Mignola comics, too, if I remember. But I never bought any of those. I rented them all and enjoyed them. But they were just kind of like I'm good. I just need to immerse myself in them.
They weren't a waste of time. Nope. But you're still like that takes space.
But I love the Del Toro, the first Del Toro movie, and the second movie has its merits. But I love the first one. A lot.
I just recently rewatched it, and after I think I saw it in the theaters, but then watched it again on iTunes or whatever. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It does it hold up? It holds up for you?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, and I'm not as deep into Hellboy as Cole is.
Like when you revisit stuff you loved once, and you're actually.
Mostly just want to get rid of the white bread guy.
Yep.
He's just such a waste of space for me.
Yeah, so. They did so many character shifts, the second one plays to more silly humor, and I just didn't care for it that much. But I got to tell you though, I still love the Abe Sapien design from the movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thought he was that a whole makeup scheme was gorgeous. The voice work. I liked him better. I liked the design concept better in the movie than I did in the comic.
Do we know if we're getting an Abe Sapien in this version?
No word yet. No word yet.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. So, I'm looking forward to David Harbour as Hellboy. And moving on, Cole, you reviewed Mr. Miracle recently.
I did.
And it's come out that Mitch Gerads... Or Grads, however you pronounce his last name.
The drawer guy?
The drawer. He needs to let his schedule breathe.
Uh-oh.
And so there's going to be a break between issue 6 and issue 7 out of apparently this 12-issue arc. So how do you feel about that? Are you upset?
No.
Throwing your Mr. Miracles down in anger and running away?
No, because we've lived through the 90s where, there are a lot of these big gun wunderkin people who thought they're... excrescence smelled better than everybody else's, and they just did not have any problem with missing deadlines. In fact, there are some comic books that have been missed their deadline for over 20 years.
Judging from the conversations we've had over the past 2.5 years here, that deadlines are sort of it's like a loose philosophy,
it's a guideline.
Well, and for all the creator-owned stuff, a couple months is kind of nothing.
And in the creator-owned stuff, they tend to tell you like we'll be back in a few months. They communicate something sometimes if they're really nice about it.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate that level of communication because it tells the reader what to expect.
Yeah.
Hopefully that'll be somewhere in the issue, like we'll see you again, blah blah blah.
Because
otherwise, then it's just in some article that's lost in the internet. But but that is appreciated.
Yeah, I appreciate it a lot. It's like it's not gonna chap me at all because.
No.
I don't come into the store a lot and order stuff and pre-order stuff, but there was a time where I'd go into the old location and Batman Europa and ask, can you reorder this for me? And Chris would look at me and just shake his head and like, we don't know when that's going to come out.
It took years to finish.
Yeah, and that was the worst example of it.
And every issue had a different artist because of that afterwards.
Again. cool. Excretions that smells better than everybody else's.
All right. So, Mr. Miracle, taking a break. Another little bit of comic news that I gleaned from the internet. It concerns Action Comics number 987. So, spoilers for that. Hey, Avol, what are they going to do when they reach issue 1,000? Is there going to be a party?
They'll charge you $10 at least.
Maybe like there'll be a party, but yeah, definitely
$10. They'll probably
so
be a party.
So do you think, so I did peek, I haven't been reading these Superman books, but Chris, have you guys been reading?
The main Superman book we're pretty good on.
I keep up via trades, coworker and I have
this is Action, and I only check in on that from time to time.
And when I saw the promo for it, I'm like, because DC is working the Alan Moore, Dave Gibbons, Watchmen continuity. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's going to be Ozymandias.
Yeah, so that was a red herring. They did that on purpose. Yeah. So.
Or was it?
No.
So what was it when back in the 90s it was the crossover and the big reveal was going to be
Monarch.
Who was Monarch?
Millennium.
It was Millennium.
Yeah.
And the big reveal was going to be that it was Hawk of Hawk and Dove, and everybody figured it out.
No, it was supposed to be Captain Atom.
Oh, that was the other.
And so the thing is, this is before internet.
Don't do drugs, kids. You forget things from 20 years ago.
No, that's why this is the precedent for horrible switch outs and surprises. Before the internet, but everybody pretty much guessed, like, oh, it's going to be Captain Atom. And DC was like, how did you figure that out? And they're like, because it's the most freaking obvious thing you could do.
Unfortunately.
But go ahead, because it makes sense. But DC was like, no, it's not what we're going to do.
Yeah.
It's Hawk from Hawk and Dove. And he's like, that doesn't, what?
Nope.
So you ruined like two or three characters with that one move. Yep. So I always feel that sometimes they make one of these things as like a temporary point of like, we don't know who it is. You don't know who it is. We'll figure it out at the last minute when we pull the name out of a hat.
Yep.
It could have been Ambush Buck for all we know.
Whoa.
Probably would have been better as Ambush Buck.
Yeah, I like that idea much better.
Yeah. So should we spoil who it is?
Spoiler alert for Action Comics 987 if you haven't read it yet. So the true identity of Dr. Oz is getting revealed. And the reason I put this in the show notes is because I thought the character it turns out to be had died.
He did.
Yeah, and along with his whole planet.
Yeah, so it's Jor-El.
Yeah,
father.
Which maybe it's not like his Jor-El because they're dealing with lots of alternate realities.
That's right.
There is a multiverse.
Yeah, it could be a evil Jor-El who's just kind of like, well, I'm going to come here and I like this Clark, so maybe I'll protect this one.
So that was my question. Is this Jor-El a universe-hopping Jor-El who's going to a universe where Batman's father actually did die in the explosion?
We'll find out.
I'm going to stick with my Captain Atom, Hawk, switcheroo thing, because I think it was going to be Ozymandias.
It's still Ozymandias with makeup on or something.
It's going to be a Scooby-Doo reveal. That would be Jim Lee's fantasy. Ultimate fantasy.
Yeah.
And I could have gotten away with it if not for you lousy kids.
Exactly that. Yeah. That'd be kind of great.
Side note, Jim Lee is crazy about Scooby-Doo. Love Scooby-Doo so much. That's probably why Scooby-Doo Apocalypse is still around.
Yes.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
But I think you're probably right. It's probably one of those where it's like, oh, they figured it out. We have to change it. Because, you know, executives and creatives want to be the smartest ones in the room.
Yeah,
because
that's going to make money.
Yeah. All right, and finally this week, Mark Hamill, I think, is pulling a little bit of wool over our eyes, and he says not to read a certain 1977 comic for fear of the Last Jedi spoilers. Cole, talk about this.
Well, I actually have all the Marvel Star Wars comics from back in the day because I actually read them from back in the day.
So surprised.
So I think that Mr. Hamill done went and punked us in the most joyful possible way. So this was he was referring to Marvel Star Wars number 49, published July 1981. So this actually is between Empire and Jedi.
It's older than me.
Yeah. It was written by Mike Barr, drawn by Walt Simonson and Tom Palmer. And there's actually some really beautiful illustrations. But, you know, this is a time period where the Marvel creatives who are working on the Star Wars comics just had their hands and legs and everything possible bound tightly. So they, you know, they couldn't tell any risky stories. They couldn't venture outside. And I don't even know if they had a particular Bible of what type of story elements they could use beyond.
They probably had a no list. Because that's what happens these days is don't do this, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because by the time we got to the Dark Horse Star Wars books, those are some really great comics that happened then. But that was after the fact. And they could play a little bit more fast and loose. But here's the thing. Those comics felt like they were in the Star Wars universe. And Marvel's Star Wars comic never, ever felt like it was in that universe. Case in point, this story is actually about Luke and Leia going tracking down this displaced royal prince to return him to his throne world to take his rightful place on the throne. I think either oust his cousin or his evil brother. And so Luke and Leia...
you keep saying Leia.
Yeah.
It's Leia.
No, I grew up saying Leia. Leia, Leia.
Okay, anyway.
Tomato, tomato.
Tomato, tomato. Mm-hmm.
So they are... they're dressed up as a buccaneer. And so Luke's got a eye patch and a floppy hat and red sideburns and a handlebar mustache. And Leia is in a yellow jumpsuit with a blonde wig. Anyway, so where does the Last Jedi thing come in? Well, the displaced prince has a companion who's this, you know, tall insect-like guy who was a would-be Jedi, and his name is Jedediah. Jedediah had like some type of cranial injury, so he's a few eggs short of a nest. He's a couple of marbles short of a bag, but he's just this well-meaning guy who thinks he's a Jedi but isn't really. Hence the Last Jedi, and it's a really bland, lame, innocuous story. And if there's anything in here that the J.J. Abrams and Disney team at Star Wars or the Star Wars team at Disney would pluck out of this to see into the Last Jedi story, then God love them all. But I think Mr. Hamill was punking us. But I got to tell you guys, I hopped on eBay.
It's popping.
40, 50 bucks.
For that?
Of course he did.
For this issue.
Thing you have right
of
there?
Of course he punked us. Yeah.
So it went from like in throughout this week, they went from being like $10 to $24 to $25 to $35 to $40 and up.
Right.
Because people are selling it as, you know, secret plot points of Star Wars 8.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And he knew what he was doing.
That poor programmer who buys one for $50.
Or better yet, they buy him slab for $300 and think they are really, you know.
Mark Hamill has like a long box of them and he just really wanted to.
How do I get rid of these?
Yeah. And he was like, plot point, yes, eBay. Yeah, so you will all do that.
I think you've nailed it.
We got your number, Mark. We
get like quarter bins everywhere or something. I don't know.
Side note. Yeah. After a couple marbles short of a bag, I just want to say a couple stones short of a Hellboy.
Yes, I thought you were going to bring it back.
Oh,
nice.
But, you know, it's great Walt Simonson, Tom Palmer artwork, and Barr was not a bad writer. And this is actually one of the few times in my recollection that this the story was, or at least the artwork was solid, because it got really sloppy after a while. And even though the comic, I think, ran 75, 80 issues. Or did it hit 100?
107.
It hit 107.
Yeah. I think.
Yeah.
Something.
Oddly specific.
I may just be old, but when you were flipping through that, some of that text looks really hard to read.
It was very hard to read. And the printing process was terrible.
Yeah.
You want to take because there was some of it where it was muddy and the registration slips, you know, and I'm like, God, did we really read these comic books that was crappily printed and we were okay about this?
Absolutely.
And it's on the newsprint. It's not on glossy stock paper. Yeah. It's on that newsprint.
It was cheaper.
And it smells, you know, and it has that smell to it. But it's 50 cents.
Parents are telling their kids not to stand in front of the TV because it's going to ruin their eyes. Little did they know that their comic book was doing the exact same thing. Let's move on to Book Report.
Three people here have glasses.
I know. And all right, let's move on to Book Report. And Chris Casso, MG, let's start with you, sir.
I read the new Image series called Angelic by Spurrier and Wijnegard. 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 I really, really liked it. It is a post-apocalyptic story where humans are gone, and they apparently left behind different enhanced animals that they used in their wars. And specifically, it follows a tribe of flying monkeys who formed a religion around humans. And of course, it's horrible. And the main character is one monkey who thinks a little too much. She asks questions about all their holy rites, and she doesn't want to do her rite of passage, which is horrible for females because it turns them into breeders and mutilates their bodies. So she's trying to kind of get out of it. At the same time, they're at war against flying mecha dolphins who have a great pattern.
They're as great as they sound.
Yep. And there's also like evil mecha cats, and there's all these other weird creatures, and some of them worship different things. There are the manatees who worship a god called AI, and it's basically
a huge manatee.
And basically, they're worshiping the faulty, like, Wikipedia search engine.
I love manatee puns, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Because I love manatees.
So, yeah, it is really good. I also read number two because they sent us a free preview, and it got even better. Yeah. So I will highly recommend it. It's only, what is it, $3.99. Good art, good story, interesting world, and lots of fun if you like post-apocalyptic stuff.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Chris. Angelic. All right. Cole Hornaday, what do you got for us?
Well, a couple weeks back, or maybe even longer, we were talking horror stories and horror comics, and Nicole mentioned how much she loved Harrow County from Dark Horse by Colin Bunn and Tyler Crook. And I had never read it, so I went and got all the volumes from the local public library and read up into volume 5, I think is the most recent one.
Dang, you went deep.
I went deep. I got so caught
deep
up in it.
Fast.
So I thoroughly enjoy it. This is a great series.
They're a fast read, too, like because you just consume it. You know?
Well, but you know what? But what I love about it and what fascinates me about it, well, let me kind of give you the background, is that it starts out, it's in a nondescript, maybe you do know where it is, in Depression-era South, and you meet this young woman named Emmy, who clearly has some supernatural abilities, and then come to find out that she may or may not be the reincarnation of this evil witch that has held the town in her thrall for years until the townspeople killed the witch and buried her under this evil tree, or, well, the tree wasn't evil beforehand. And then every so many years, the tree actually gives birth to a resurrected Hester, or, you know, and it gets pretty involved. Before Hester was put under the tree.
Just like the idea of that tree right there. That looks good. I don't know. It's evil. Yeah. Let's just do it anyway.
Well, you know, but it goes back to the whole druidic tradition of them planting trees in graveyards to suck the evil out of the soil.
Mm.
Yew trees. That was the whole thing about yew trees.
Mm.
Not me trees.
Yew trees. Thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. and I don't want to get too mired down, but one of the things that makes for a great deal of variety in the story is before Hester gets put underground, she has twisted and contorted a lot of the town, and it turns out she's actually made a lot of the township from clay, and they're actually her sycophants. So the story starts in this really small scope, and that's the way good horror stories are, is that the less you know, the better, and less is more.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts in this very small scope, and then it starts to expand, and it starts to expand, and then you learn that that Emmy is not actually the incarnation of Hester. She's actually the incarnation of someone else, someone who's actually a benevolent creature.
Ooh.
But have you read this far into the series?
No,
I'm not going to spoil it for you.
Exciting!
But the scope goes from, you learn that Emmy is actually from this whole pantheon of supernatural beings.
Ooh.
And it's very Clive Barker-esque, because Barker started out writing these twisted, little, short, ugly, hideous, disgusting, frightening stories. And then he became this epic storyteller with Weave World and a lot of his other books. But he made his name with the Books of Blood and the Inhuman Touch. And that's kind of what's going on here, because it starts as a horror story and expands into more of a fantasy universe thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're still in, you know, the depressed South. There's still these race issues, but there are all these supernatural creatures running around, and there are layers and layers that are happening. And I highly recommend the series, but don't don't think you're getting into a Southern Gothic horror story. It's much bigger than that.
And do you enjoy the artwork?
Well, you know what? It's not consistent because Tyler Crick draws some of it, and then Carla Speed McNeil draws some of it, Hannah Christensen, Jenny Manley Lee. It's all over the place. I got to tell you, I love Tyler Crook. I love his pen and inks and his watercolor washes, but Carla Speed McNeil has her own style that is really gorgeous, and you may recall her from
Finder.
Finder, and she also does No Mercy, which me and one other person really love.
So, like, in the latest collection of Harrow County called Abandoned, it's volume 5, you have all these artists doing separate stories, and it's a little jarring, but not really, because each, you kind of get caught up with the tone of each of those stories, and the artists' efforts fit that tone. So, I recommend this stuff. It's a great deal of fun.
Cool. Harrow County.
Good.
Harrow County.
I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Yeah. Thanks, Cole. And finally, Nicola, what do you got for us?
I didn't read anything.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding. I have this whole stack here.
The last 2 years.
Such a liar.
Look, she put a lot of time and effort into
it. Dirty liar. Yeah, I spent like 11 hours. Can I just get like one free pass? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so.
Bye. Moving on to quiz time, everybody.
The end. I'm fired. All right. So I read The Interview by Manuela Fior, and it's a Fantagraphics publication. It's by the author who also did 5,000 Kilometers Per Second, in case anyone's familiar with that. And it's a futuristic, supernatural, character-driven
book.
Something. There's a tone to it that's got that's really interesting. So the pages are all this yellowish page, and the line work and everything is very interesting. It revolves around this one guy who's a psychologist, and he is clearly in the end of his marriage, like his wife is leaving, and he sees this young girl who is supposedly hallucinating. But prior to meeting her, he has this experience where he sees something interesting in the sky. It's lights and triangles and things, and he crashes his car, and he's very startled by it, and he has no idea really what he's seen. And then he meets this girl who says, I know you've seen these things, and I know you know about this, and I'm not really hallucinating. This is like the future is coming to us. And he starts getting more intimate with this woman through conversations. They meet up and they end up having a little bit more of a relationship than a doctor patient. And the interview, the actual title, comes at the very end of the book, because I was reading it and I was like, I have no idea what this means, but that's cool. And then it ties it all together. I'm not going to give anything away, but it's just this like slightly in the future. It's in Italy. The style of it really does remind me of like 70s style Italian movies. My husband had read it, and he said that it reminded him of Fellini, like La Dolce Vita. And I actually recently watched that movie, and it does have a little bit of a feel to it. This one's clearly sci-fi and not just like not as much with the pun that is The Good Life, and it's like everybody's terrible in that movie. But it was really beautiful, and I found myself really gripped by the story, by the characters, the emotions that you saw just in people's faces, their posing, the way that this person draws scenery is also gorgeous. The way that they shine like light on certain instances. It's just really compelling. I was like, I'll just read a little and I'll put it down. And then I was like, or I'll read this entire thing in one night and go to bed at 2 a.m. So I think if you like that sort of thing, especially like Italian movies, 1970s style, you want something that's kind of one and done, that's very evocative, I would recommend reading The Interview.
Cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Nicole.
Mm-hmm.
And that is book part, and that is our show, and coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com, as well as Comic Extension here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicextension.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes or however you get your podcasts at perfectboundpodcast.com, or send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And now, friends, get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. And this week, the questions come to us from Mr. Cole Hornaday.
So
late on us.
Okay, will do. So this quiz time was inspired by our own beloved Nicole Lamb. I'm going to call this one Bully for Bovines, a quiz time devoted to some unusual ungulates and rambunctious ruminators. Are you ready?
I waited my whole life for this moment.
Rescued by Damian Wayne during a raid on a secret Leviathan slaughterhouse, this battling bovine was eventually adopted by the Waynes and currently resides in the Batcave. Who is this hoofed wonder associated with Robin's shift to vegetarianism?
Batcow!
That would be Batcow, created by Grant Morrison and Chris Burnham, first appeared in Batman Incorporated, Volume 2, Number 1 in 2012. Trained by villain Cheerface Chippendale to eat people and kept in a pit with other carnivorous creatures like alligators and crocodiles, this farmland fiend eventually tussled with Defender of the City, the Tick, who taught her the benefits of using her powers for good as a good doer.
Is it... Oh, why can't I remember her name?
I thought it gave you that comment.
Yeah, you just gave me the comment.
Is
it like Mad Cow? Man Cow?
Keep going.
Hell Cow?
Shall I free us from this torture?
I want to make an utter pun.
Man Eating Cow.
Man Eating. Okay, I knew there was a man in there.
Man Eating Cow was created by Ben Edlund and first appeared in The Tick, number 7, in 1990.
I said I waited, not prepared for this day. Yeah. So, anyway.
Well, there's more to come. Hold on.
Okay, good.
In 1675, Bessie, a domesticated cow living on a Swiss farm, becomes the prey of Count Dracula, who is unable to find any available humans to slake his appetite. Upon discovering her carcass, her kindly owner, Hans, buries her, only to discover too late that Bessie has become one of the bovine undead. Centuries later, our favorite beleaguered fowl, little fowl, Howard the Duck, is investigating the deaths of several farmers in Cleveland, Ohio, only to discover this demonic bovine monstrosity is the cause. Who was she?
Now, this one is Hell Cow.
Hell
right?
Cow!
Yes. Okay, good. I got one of them.
Hell Cow, created by Steve Gerber and John Brunner, first appeared in Giant Size Man Thing number 5. Okay, make the jokes. Published in August 1975. Okay, bear with me. This one's a little bit lengthy, but it's going to be worth it, kids. Early in their career, the Fantastic Four defeated a group of Skrull spies when Reed Richards brainwashed them into becoming cows. Through a series of unfortunate circumstances, the Skrull cows were shipped to a slaughter. House. When some of the butchered Skrull beef was consumed by humans, it transferred the Skrull's adaptable DNA code into the human cells, resulting in a small portion of people suffering from a bizarre condition in which these individuals not only gained shape-shifting powers equal to, if not greater than, actual Skrulls, but also developed an intense fear or hatred of the Skrulls. Several resentful sufferers of this strange syndrome band together to wipe the Skrull scourge from the countryside. What was the name of this violently merry band?
The Skrull Kill Crew.
Skrull Kill Crew was created by Grant Morrison, Mark Millar, Brendan McCarthy, and Steve Yowell, and first appeared in Skrull Kill Crew.
Say that 5 times fast.
Yes, thank goodness.
Skrull Kill Crew, number 1 in 1995. Okay, wrapping it up, bring it home. Bring it back to the barn, actually. In the late 19th century. In the late 19th century, an irradiated comet struck the western plains, creating a cloud-enshrouded mesa. Everything trapped on the top of this plateau was cow-matized by the light from the cow-mit and evolved into bovapomorphic state, giving rise to a posse of lawmen known as...
I can't remember, but I know.
The Wild West Cowboys of Moo Mesa. The cow part stands for Code of the West. It was an animated series produced in 1992, created by Mirage Studios staff artist Ryan Brown. The animated series ran for 2 seasons and was seen in syndication until 1999.
What? Ryan Brown is the same name that the God Hates Astronauts comic guy is, and he is terrible at drawing cows, and so there's like a character in there with a flaming cow head that looks like a horse, and they make jokes.
Is it the same Ryan Brown?
Don't know.
I don't know. I
kind of doubt it.
No, there's not.
Yeah,
no.
But Ryan Brown is.
If so, he's got a cow thing. Also, he can't draw cows, so I don't know.
All right, well, that's my quiz time.
But it's interesting.
All right, well, all for you, darling.
Yeah, that's
Thank
a good one.
That was fun. That was super fun.
And moo unto you, and moo unto you, and moo unto you, dear listener. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.